Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. And I want to give a big thank you to Ananth Krishnan, who has agreed to be interviewed. Ananth is Executive Vice President and Chief Technology Officer at Tata Consultancy Services and directs research, innovation, and co-innovation there. This interview is an element of IRI's Digital Transformation Community. The DXC is a community of organizations that are on the journey toward digital transformation. Through the DXC, you can access case studies with fresh, relevant content. The latest one on USG is available on our website. We also have a conference dedicated to digital transformation. It's the Digital Futures Conference, and it'll be October 12th through the 14th in Cleveland, Ohio. We have a facilitated roundtable. We have facilitated roundtable discussions on key topics. We do updates with insights and additional resources, and we're looking at doing some workshops to take deep dives on shared pain points. And finally, we have our webinar interviews with thought leaders like we're doing today. These will always take place on the third Thursday of the month at noon Eastern Time. Next time, we will be talking to the digitalization team at USG. I'll be sure to sign all of you up to receive updates on the DXC. If you do not wish to receive updates, just let me know. I have a few housekeeping items to get through before we can begin our conversation with Ananth. First, this session is being recorded, and you will get a link to the recording in a few days. We will be distributing the recording as a podcast, so there will be no visuals here today. Second, please hold all questions until the end. Once we open the floor to questions, you can type your questions in and I will read them out for you. I doubt we'll be able to get to all of the questions, but we will try. So let's go ahead and get started. Again, thanks, Anand, for joining us today amidst all of the chaos. The world is very different from when we planned this conversation out. So a lot of our
Great.
members are A lot of our members are faced with the question of how to get started on their digitalization journey. What have you seen that works well?
So thank you, Lee, and pleasure to be part of the IRI DXC Thought Leader webinar. And I will frame my responses to this question and all the others in two dimensions. One, as TCS as a company, I mean, we are a large global company, over $20 billion in revenues, more than 400,000 consultants all across the world, 60 or more countries, and very complex in our operations. So there is that aspect of digitalization of TCS itself. And then TCS's business is to work with all the world's leading companies in many, many industries, manufacturing, automotive, aerospace, chemicals, all the way to banking, financial services, retail, healthcare, et cetera, et cetera. And we are partners with them on their digitalization journey as their consultants, as their system integrators, and as their product development partners. So I'll frame my responses to these questions in perhaps both these dimensions. Now, to your specific question, how do you get started on a digitalization journey? I think there are two ways of answering that. And one is to have the organizational strategy, the vision, the culture, the people aligned to the fact that digitalization is an inevitable and indeed desirable state of affairs. That is a transition that has to be led from the top, very often from the board, from the leadership, from the technology leadership, from the operation leadership, from the CFO, the head of operations, the head of sales, the head of marketing, all the way to the CIO and the CTO. Getting the culture right and getting that strategy and the vision right, I think, is necessary. And secondly, having got that piece done, it's very important to do what I would call a three-step process. Look at your core capabilities. Your core capabilities, of course, include your technology, your business itself, whatever your industry you might be in. There are lots of enabling things you have to do to build what I would call a digital core so that you're ready for your digital journey. The digital journey typically has two additional capabilities that we might touch on later in this webinar. One is what I would call the data capability and the analytic capability. It's a point where most people start and use digitalization to become more data driven, more analytics driven, more real time, better decision making, et cetera, et cetera. And digitalization is also most importantly about the consumption of digital. Indeed, in our personal lives, we are using digital technology all the time. And that is because digital technology is easy to use. It's very, very in tune with who you are as an individual, whether it's your phone, whether it's your tablet, your laptop, or whatever device you might be familiar with, even devices that we now speak to, et cetera, et cetera. So focus on the consumability of digital, which brings me back to the people aspect as well. Unless people buy into the fact, your people buy into the fact that digital is inevitable, it's necessary, it must be there in the workplace, in the business processes, in the way the business runs, you are not going to get off first base. Once you get off that, build your core, build your data smarts, and build the experience capability. Let me just close with one example. I know that many folks on this call might be from what would be called traditional industries, manufacturing, et cetera, et cetera. I see in our business, we deal with a lot of different companies on this journey. Almost all of them have followed this playbook that I outlined. Get the culture and strategy right, and then do the structural changes. Figure out the business capability sequence, you know, whether it's the shop floor, whether it's the product itself, whether it's the way you service the products once they're out in the field, whether you, the way you build new business models. You get that vision right, then you execute it with the technologies. The technologies usually are not the problem. They're there. They need to be implemented, of course. They need to be rolled out. And finally, you demonstrate the benefits. Right. So we have a catchphrase in the manufacturing sector that when we work with our customers, we call it, you know, bring life to things. Digital does bring life to things. So that's how we get started.
So simple. So many of our members.
Simple to articulate, perhaps not so simple to do, but worthwhile.
True. Very true. So many of our members report having challenges getting C-suite buy-in for their digitalization efforts, and clearly that's not an issue here. So as a member of the C-suite, what challenges have you faced in implementing digital from the top down?
So the C-suite is actually fairly diverse if you look at it. So when I look at my colleagues in the TCS executive leadership, as the CTO, I had all the new cool stuff, right? So I'm responsible for new products and services. All new products and services that TCS will launch in the next couple of years, you know, comes through our labs, through our partners, through our innovation pipeline, et cetera, et cetera. TCS research is part of my responsibility. Our partner network is part of our responsibility. So by definition, I'm the I don't have to sell to myself, right? So let's assume that I'm already sold on digital. Where you actually convince the C-suite, I think, is based on the quality of the champion. Usually it's the CIO or the CTO or the CDO who's expected to be the champion. But make sure that you have your chairman, your CEO, and your board, and most importantly, your CFO on your side. That's the first step, right? Get the vision and strategy buy-in from these four or five very key stakeholders. The rest are actually surprisingly easier, right? Chief marketing officer, for example. I've never had to sell to our CMO. Our CMO, Rajshree, is a lady. She's probably more digital savvy than any of us, and she's probably doing a lot of digital stuff without telling anybody. our head of sales, absolutely loves the story because it allows him to demonstrate results in the field, and that's what salespeople really enjoy. Head of operations, again, you know, being a tech company, it was a whole lot easier for us, but head of operations is actually the head of our biggest change initiative in the company. We call that Enterprise Agile by 2020. This is 2020. So by December 31st, we will be announcing ourselves to be hopefully Enterprise Agile. Our COO is my biggest ally for driving digitalization internal to the company along with our CIO. Right. So, you know, these stakeholders each have a different viewpoint, and our line of business presidents who run our P&Ls, in our case, digital is our business. So, you know, I didn't have any challenges in really selling them. They were, in fact, saying, we need these new products. We need these new services. Guys, how fast can you deliver them? Right. So I think it's a once you get the strategy and the top down right, C-suite follows. But you have to be deliberate about it. The board and the C-suite have to spend time contextualize digital to your industry, to your business, to your customers and your context. Once you get past that, individually, everybody gets it.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So what does your digitalization team look like?
Okay. Here's where I'll do the internal and the external a little differently. So internally, the digitalization team is led by the COO, as I mentioned, and our COO drives these enterprise initiatives. So we did Machine First as our first initiative 2 years ago, which said, let's automate anything and everything that we do. Enterprise Agile is now the people side of the story to build agile practices and agile workplaces and agile way of working as a culture in the company. And the CIO is really the execution sword arm, so to speak, for anything that we do internally. I'll drill down on what the CIO's organization has delivered us, but very carefully, we have made that promise of digital. Remember I said that you have to get that experience right? Mm-hmm. Every last person in the company appreciates the fact that now they can transact on the company's internal systems on their mobile. They're not tied down to coming to a specific spot in the workplace to do whatever their job is and be on a desktop or on a laptop. Mobile has been a big, big shift. You know, our CFO really loved the way in which the digital data layer and the analytics which went with it allowed him and his team to be able to close our books literally within a week of every quarter. Now that's a big deal for any global company, right? And that's like a major achievement that our CIO and team have really pulled off. If I look at the board of directors, our board meetings are completely digital. You know, there's no paper. There is a secure tablet device. It's a commercial off-the-shelf tablet that we publish all the board papers. They get uploaded in a safe way to the all the board members and all the executive leadership. Everything, including signatures, is electronic. So, you know, that this kind of experience builds confidence that digitalization is not just something which is like fancy stuff, which, you know, we'll show a couple of key stakeholders, but it's real for every employee from the junior most to the board members to the CFO to, of course, all the people in the line. So that's on the internal side, which has to be driven and led. The COO and the CIO lead it, and they would consume what they need from my organization. On the external, we are organized differently. So for external digitalization, we have a president of what we call business and technology services. Now, coincidentally, his last name is Krishnan as well. So in no relation of mine, but the two Krishnans are the external agents for the TCS digital enablement. So we work, both of us work with our line of business presidents, the other presidents, the guys who head the industry sectors, the banking sector, the retail sector, et cetera. And we provide their teams all the necessary capabilities, whether they're products, their services, their platforms, their technologies, their alliances, partnerships, in order that they are able to project the right digital products and services to their market. So the internal organization is COO and CIO. supported by the CTO. The external facing organization, predominantly from a digital perspective, is led by the president of business and technology services, again, supported by the CTO. Right, so that's how I would say we are set up.
Okay. So what do you think is key to a successful digital strategy then?
Like I said, the strategy starts from the strategy itself. You know, what is it that you need to have as relevant to your business? You have to be very aware of the forces in your specific industry. What is it that your customers or your value chain expects? If you're a manufacturer, you're a retailer, a bank, an airline, a health company, an insurer, every industry has a nuance on the strategy, right? And what does that strategy look like today? And what is that strategy likely to evolve in a couple of years as the industry, as an industry starts adopting digital and then everybody gets used to it. So you have to have that roadmap in front of you. Once you have that roadmap, you have to have your ability to execute that roadmap, right? So I mentioned the digital core. I mentioned the hygiene factors like data and analytics capabilities, and then the ability to translate the core and the data smarts into winning experiences for your employees, for your people, for your customers, for your partners, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the second step. The third and most important is the ability to take this and make it truly part of your organization's culture, your organization's DNA, the organization's work practices, the way you hire people, the way you train your people. In TCS, we took a pretty different view on the as a success factor for our digital strategy. We said we have to be able to enable every single TCS person in every part of the world to be part of this journey. Right? A lot of companies said, "Oh, we got to be digital, so let's fire everybody and we'll just get a whole new crew in and we'll be digital." Right? We said, "No, that's not the right way to do it." In fact, our CEO came up with this nice phrase that we use internally, essentially to say there are no legacy people. There are only legacy technologies. People can always learn new technologies. So there's nothing like a person who will not learn something new, especially if it's something as cool and they probably use it in their personal lives. As I said, they say, "Hey, I'm really interested in, you know, using this or building something or doing something with it." So give the opportunity to everybody in the organization to be digital in an appropriate way. Some might be fully technically digital. They might be, you know, end up as architects, as designers, as developers, as people who might, you know, integrate, I don't know, IoT technologies with analytics and deliver some completely new capability. Some might be scientists and researchers. And there's a lot to be done in that space, and I'll come to that in a minute. Others might just be participants in a digital organization, but in a very redefined work role. Right? So all these elements of the strategy are important. So the people part, the capability part, the competency part, and so on. Now let me get to the tech stuff, because as a CTO, I guess you would expect me to talk about tech, right? So you have to have a view on what is it that you need from a technology perspective. Again, it'll be different for TCS, it'll be different for any other company in any other industry. What is it that you do with your industry context and your ability to shape that technology is driven by that context. So you might like to create intellectual property as appropriate to your industry context. You might like to turn that intellectual property into new products. If you're a manufacturer, you might like to look at, is my whole manufacturing process likely to become more, shall we say, efficient if I can run a whole full-scale digital twin of my plant? Can I help my maintenance process if there is a different way by which I can use, I don't know, augmented reality to train my workforce to service that component either in the shop floor or in the field, and so on. So you start thinking about new products and new platforms in the context of your business And then you see whether you can backfill it with your own IP, or you depend on a partner ecosystem, or you go ahead and try to integrate something just off the shelf that might be available in open source, et cetera, et cetera. Right. So that's essentially the way I would summarize the key elements. The strategy itself, very contextual to your business. Secondly, get your people along and essentially allow everybody to be digital in their personal and in their professional lives. Give them the opportunity to learn. And thirdly, turn these two into your actual execution in terms of intellectual property, in terms of looking at the way in which you might like to go through your digital journey in terms of products or platforms or services or automation or whatever.
Okay, so what's the biggest success that you've seen?
Let me pick one internal and perhaps one external again, just to keep that thread going. So the one on internal, or perhaps one and a half, because they're both sort of people. I mentioned the skilling, reskilling of nearly at the time 400,000 people when we started this journey in 2017 or 18. How do you teach new digital skills to, you know, a respectable size a city of nearly 400,000 people, and try to do that within a year, right? It's, you know, when we went to universities and curricula and said, guys, this is what we want to do, they say, you must be crazy. I mean, a typical university has 30,000 students, and they take 4 years to teach us whatever degree that we enroll for, right? I said, you're talking about 400,000 people, giving them a whole degree type rigorous training program on digital, everything from digital technologies to usage of digital to leading digital teams to digital products and business models and all the rest of that, a whole curriculum for a vast population to be delivered within a year. So we said, why don't we digitalize this itself, right? So this became our biggest internal success story. It's a TCS platform. It's now so well known within the company that a lot of people want to use it outside the company. And we've actually built an external persona of this to say, hey, guys, if you want to use this, of course, we'll make money on it. But hey, it's available. You don't have to build it yourself. This learning platform, you know, it makes learning consumable. It's any place, anytime. It's on your phone. It's on your tablet. It's on your laptop. It's on a desktop at home or at work. And it's a game that you play with yourself, with your peers, your competitors that you know, or colleagues that you don't even know across the company, and you learn together. It has had enormous success. So I would call that out. We've taken some of this to the hiring that we do. Right now, I'll just give you a little bit of context. TCS has, as I said, over 400,000 people. We have very high retention rates. We retain more than 90%+ of our people. But even if we lose 10% of our people every year, that's like 40,000 people that we have to hire to replace the ones that have left. Right? Now, hiring 40,000 people is not funny. Right?
So, no.
So we said, why don't we, you know, learn from, again, the universities? You know, how do the US universities or the Indian universities or anybody else hire people? They have standardized testing. So the TCS National Qualifier Test is like the GRE or equivalent in any country. It's well publicized. It has allowed us to go completely digital on the way we hire from college. Right? We used to have campus hiring. We used to go to the fairs. We used to run set up booths. We used to hire 20 people here and 30 there and 40 there and 10 here. Now we say that, guys, you know, here's a test, you can take it. There are proctored centers and there are procedures to do the test. It's standardized, it's randomized, it's very secure. And if you got a valid test score, come see us, we'll do an online interview. And depending on how that goes, you'll do a next step HR interview and a psychological profile. You're in within perhaps 48 hours.
Oh, wow.
Now, this has revolutionized the way we hire. Right. So
yeah.
Two examples, both sort of people oriented. Our head of HR absolutely, you know, loved the way this have gone. He, you know, they were conceptualized, developed by our CIO and team, my teams were involved a lot in the technology and the putting together the experience and the story. And it's going like the gangbusters, right? So that's on the success story on the internal. On the external, I would like to highlight perhaps, I mentioned the Life to Things story, right? A while ago on bringing the whole sort of shop floor to life, you know, with multiple technologies, analytics, visualization, Internet of Things, and so on. The success story there has been in the energy and utility sectors. I think I mentioned digital twins very briefly. So the ability to create a digital twin of a piece of equipment is been around for a while, and many vendors now offer that as part of the deal. If you buy a supercritical boiler from vendor X, you know, very often they will sell you the ability to manage that digital persona or the digital twin of that boiler and optimize it for various parameters out of the box. However, if you are going to be looking at a whole, let's say, energy power plant, and you want to run a twin of the power plant, not just the one boiler, but everything else which goes along in the power plant, so that you can now crank the levers to say, all right, I've got a such and such power surge coming up, or this power dip coming up, or that transient situation I need to handle, you need to be able to twin the whole plant. Right? So we have created an ability to do that. You know, that's TCS's research has created what we call an intelligent power plant. And now we're testing it in different parts of the world. It works with individual equipment-based twins. And it looks like our first attempt. Now, based on how this goes, we've got a pipeline of things. We can potentially do an intelligent oil refinery. We can potentially do an intelligent, process manufacturing pipeline for a chemical manufacturer. And even more interesting, we can probably do a digital twin of a bank or a digital twin of a telephone company. And that will be pretty mind-blowing in my respect. So that's just, you know, not a fully baked success story, but it's in the pipeline.
Great. We'll have to check back in with you later and see how it's gone.
Yes.
So switching gears a little bit. So partnerships seem to be a necessary element of digitalization. What makes a good partnership in this situation? And what are some warning signs that you're in a less than successful partnership?
So partnerships, I think, especially in the context of digital, are very, very necessary. There are a slew of competencies, capabilities, products, services that anybody would need in their digitalization journey. In theory, it's possible for an organization to try and do everything ourselves. I would say that the tech companies, TCS included, could give it a crack, but even we realize that we cannot and should not do everything ourselves. Right. So, as a bit of history, TCS set up this co-innovation network nearly 15, 17 years ago. And I think I've spoken about it in IRI events. My colleague Raju has spoken about it in other events as well. The TCS Co-Innovation Network is an open innovation framework. We partner with universities, we partner with startups, we partner with our suppliers who are major tech companies themselves. Increasingly, we partner with customers as well, right? So partnering is, I think, a very strong factor in your digitalization implementation. The strategy has to be yours, but how you implement is, I think, it makes sense to partner. Now, how do you know that partners are good or bad, right? Let's make it clear that partners are in it because there is something in it for them. You know, nobody partners just because of goodness of their heart. There is a selfish interest. You got to figure out what that selfish interest is. If you're partnering with a university, for example, it's important to understand that universities like to create new knowledge. Universities like to teach and transfer new knowledge to the next generation of researchers and students. Universities like to be recognized for that intellectual work in the form of papers, in the form of publications, and perhaps patents and other things. And lastly, universities do like to make money. I mean there many of them, including the publicly funded ones, always welcome the extra dollar which comes in from industrial research, right? So I'm giving universities as an example, and the same thing could be said about a startup. The same thing could be said about a tech partner. I mean, if some folks on the call want to partner with TCS, yeah, of course, we'd love to partner with you. But you know, at the end of the day, we'd like something out of it. It might be a reference, a joint marketing thing. Maybe you pay us, and we love that, and so on. So you got to understand what works for the partner. And what works for a partner would be different. What works for a startup is very different from a university, is very different from a tech company, and indeed might be very different from your customers. So you got to be able to decipher, you know, what is it that makes sense to that partner. And lastly, just like in real life, you know, in all the personal relationships that we have with a spouse, with a son or a daughter, or a parent, or a friend, or you know, you've got to be sensitive to that partner's needs and you know, go along in the journey. Sometimes it works, and you know, good for you, and you've got to make that effort to go through the rough areas as well as you do the good ones. And sometimes if it doesn't work, you know, you shake hands, and hopefully your contracting and everything else allows you to do that and part ways. All our, for example, our startup contracts are non-exclusive. They're terminable with no liability on either side for a certain notice period, et cetera, et cetera. And so on. So you've got to be able to work at the right wavelength with each type of partner. Then it eventually works.
All right. So trying to figure that part out is the most challenging part, I imagine.
Yeah. You know, you got to keep, you know, exactly like in real life. I mean, you got to watch for the warning signs. You got to be able to say, why is this not working? You know, and sometimes it might be your own assumptions, right? I didn't mention multilateral bodies, right? Sometimes you partner with, governmental committees or standards bodies and so on. So they move at, all of these move on a consensus basis. Right, so you might have a point of view, and you want to be able to say, guys, you know, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, and I don't. Why isn't anybody listening to me? You know, a standards body has to standardize amongst the community which proposes something, and then they have to standardize across a community of other peers, and then eventually goes to national standards and perhaps global standards. I mean, it's not easy, right? So I've been on many standards committees, and I've chaired a few at the national level in India and participated in a few internationally. It takes a skill to make that kind of partnership work. At the end of the day, yeah, if you've authored a standard and you've shepherded it through five levels of committees, you know, it's a major achievement. And that's what you did it for in the first place, right? But to get that through is like, you know, running a marathon with weights tied around your legs.
Yeah, that sounds terrible. So moving to a slightly different topic. So most of our members are still trying to figure out what data is the right data to capture. With the current emphasis on the capture and use of data, what tips do you have for getting that bit right?
Okay, data is, as I said, one of the foundational skills. I mentioned the core, the digital core, and then I mentioned the data and analytics core as the two foundations, and then experience as the way in which you make this magic, you know, real for every individual. So data is fundamental to digitalization. Now many different ways of looking at it. In fact, our data business, the data and analytics business, analytics and insights as we call it, they have a framework which they call data maturity framework. Right? If some of you are familiar with the software maturity framework, which came out of the Carnegie Mellon University in the 80s, it has CMM level 2, 3, 4, 5 as increasing levels of maturity of an enterprise to develop software, right? And it has many key result areas, many key performance indicators, many qualifying levels. And then when you aggregate all of that, you get a step score, 2, 3, 4, or 5. At least it directionally benchmarks you, and then it tells you what you need to improve to get to the next level of maturity. Now that framework evolved after a lot of industry collaboration, academic collaboration, and so on. inspired by that, a data maturity model is emerging, and we are key players in that. And we have got several submissions into that. So that is one way of sort of figuring out what are the 20 or 30 or 40 things that you need to do to get data which is, you know, useful, then it's good, then it's available, it's usable, and then of course you can then do useful things with it, which is necessary, right? So that is a way of approaching it. You look at industry maturity models for data. If you're interested, I can show you what we have. There will be others as well, and you figure that journey to say I'm here, or first of all, where am I, and then what do I need to do to get better, right? So that's one way of tapping the problem. Once you've identified where you are, usually the problems that you might have are, first of all, expectations. We sometimes have unrealistic expectations from our own data. Half funny way of looking at it is that if you have a telescope and you're looking at the same object through the wrong end, it looks very different, right? So you want to just turn the telescope the other way around and say, oh, okay, now I can actually see what I'm seeing. So the point is that don't have unrealistic expectations of your data and then use your instrumentation in the wrong way to draw the wrong insights from it, and that's not a good idea at all. The second is to take those small steps and say, what is it that I need to fulfill this particular task or this particular performance area or that particular process or product that I'm manufacturing, or define the data to be close to your immediate goals. Get that right. Get the confidence. I mean, it's like learning to play golf, right? I mean, you don't go out and play a PGA golf course the first time you learn how to hold a golf club, right? So you kind of, you know, practice in the range and you get a few swings right, and then you try to get that going. Lastly, you got to be patient with the culture of data. Most enterprises have never imagined that data could be a company-wide resource. So data is still stuck within different parts of the enterprise. And it's, you know, for good reasons, it could be regulatory reasons, it could be data privacy reasons, it could just be technology because somebody built some technology in a different era, is not accessible at all from another part. These are practical problems. They're not serious problems, but they are very real practical problems that you have to learn how to solve.
Okay. So you've talked quite a bit about, you know, the people approach that you have. So we heard from Professor Jerry Kane of Harvard Business School in our January thought leader interview that we should be thinking about what we want to accomplish first with the people that we have and the skill sets that they're able to develop, and the technology second. So what are your thoughts on that?
I in fact went through that that excellent session, and I had a good chat with some of my team who actually attended the webinar as well. I think what Professor Kane has, Jerry has indicated is very much in line with what I said in this talk as well. Any strategy, digitalization included, does need people to buy in. Right? And that's been TCS's learning over the last few years that we've been on the journey. We see it in the business that we do with our customers as well, as we help others through the digitalization journey. So couldn't agree with it more. I'd just like to supplement it with one of the other academics that I have a lot of respect for, Clayton Christensen. Clay Christensen passed away just a few weeks ago in Boston. He was on the board of directors of TCS as an independent director, and he mentored my thinking over many years. Clay has a similar philosophy, looking at the way in which, what's the job that the individual is trying to do, right? The individual could be your own employee, might be your customer, might be a partner, stakeholder. And then you figure out if you know what job they're trying to do, then you sort of get into their minds and they're under their skins and see how best can you fulfill that job. So that, I think, resonates with what Jerry has said about digital transformation, digital disruption. It is about people. Get into the hearts and minds and understand what makes sense to individuals, what will make your colleagues successful, what will make your team successful, what will make your department or function successful, and then take it from there. The technology, yeah, it's doable. It's not impossible. Many others have done it. Many others can help across that line. But you got to get into that people thing first, and then everything else will follow.
You know, along those same lines, organizational and cultural change seem to go hand in hand with the digitalization journey. So what elements of this have you seen that have gone well, and you know, what have you seen that's not gone so well?
So I mentioned the two, the learning thing, and I won't repeat that. So that was a big success. And then I also talked about making small but very important changes to every individual in the company. Like for example, all of us, I guess in every company would need to fill in a travel claim once in a while, or you know, you've spent something on the company's behalf, perhaps entertaining a customer or going to a seminar, and you need to raise a reimbursement and so on. Digitizing that is, it's not difficult, but it touches everybody's lives, right? And it begins to change the perception of, hey, you know what, the CIO's office really cares about me because, you know, I can do this sitting at home on my mobile rather than, you know, spending 10 minutes on it on my desktop in the office. So getting small things which make a difference to people's lives, I think is very important in building that culture. My organization, the CTO organization, runs a innovation culture program along with our head of HR. So we run hackathons, we run idea jams, we run design challenges, competitions for the most successful innovation in multiple categories every year. You know, it attracts thousands of people. Because everybody is very proud to talk about successes. So we also created a category for the most honorable failure every year. Right? We call it the Dare to Try Award. Right? So we said, okay, who is willing to put their hand up and say, we tried this, but it completely, you know, flamed out, didn't work. But here's what we learned from it. And that learning is then shared, and perhaps it starts another journey, either for the same team or for a different team. Right? So we give that award very carefully. We still don't get as many entries for that as we get for the successful innovations. But it changes the culture to say, guys, digital is not going to be all about linear successes. There will be things that you'll fail at, and let's learn from it. So these are all different aspects that we are trying to see whether we can get the culture, so to speak, right for the digital context.
Okay, that makes sense. So we're going to open the floor to questions, but while our audience mulls all of that over, I've got one more question for you, Anna. So based on what you've learned so far, what recommendations do you have for companies on their journey?
So I think to sort of recap, the journey itself is very closely tied to the company strategy. We talked about the company's culture and the people. Those two are the most foundational elements. Once you figure that out, then you kind of should get this very foundational fact about digitalization. Digitalization can impact every aspect of your business. It's not one of those incremental things that, you know, has, okay, somebody in tech is cool about digitalization. It is going to affect sales, it's going to affect production, manufacturing, front office, mid office, back office, of course, technology, research and development. Every aspect of the company's business can and will take advantage of digitalization. And just to hark back to the situation we're all in, with the COVID-19 crisis upon us, digitalization is helping in resilience. Many of us are working from home and hopefully are at least reasonably productive at what we're doing. That is the second piece, that it's going to impact every aspect of the business. Third is to get the execution right, right? And I talked about getting the core digital capabilities, the data analytics capabilities, and then the ability to translate that into an experience layer, bringing digital to life for every role, every individual, every part of the organization. Once you have executed it, then you have to have that feedback loop to say, how did it go? You know, digitalization is not just one step. If you notice, all the successful digital stories, including the most famous digital companies themselves, have this ability to constantly refresh their digital products and digital platforms. Your phone looks different to you and to me, and it looks different to you tomorrow morning, and it'll look different day after tomorrow morning, because somebody has been tweaking something in the background all the time, right? And that is the core of digital. Again, it's about short cycles, it's about agility, it's about responsiveness, and the ability to be very, very close to whoever is consuming that product or service, right? So that's the flow: vision and strategy, culture and people, the fact that there's widespread impact, get the technology right, execute it well, and then constantly refresh it as you go along.
Okay, so easy advice. I'm sure that that everyone will appreciate hearing that, though. It's a lot to take on, and I know our members are all kind of thinking of different ways of managing it, and now they think of different ways of managing it during a global crisis. So easy. So our first question here. So we've got one from Sarma RSB, who's a digital transformation consultant, and he says, TCS is a company which upholds ethics in doing things the right way. How do you see digital transformation impacting human ethics and personas and the world? Will the world become better with such data-driven / digital transformations?
Great question. So so we have been barreling along and you know, at the fringes of digital, there isn't a core concern on ethics and governance and so on, because many digital things, especially the consumer digital that we all started with 4 or 5 years ago, were sort of peripheral to our core values. Then as consumer digital started getting closer to us as individuals, the first major ethical issue which came up was data privacy, and many countries in Europe and now in the US and India and many other countries actually have legislated on privacy regulation. So that's the first instance of a concern on ethics, which is originated in the digital world, which is now changing the way in which the legal system looks at it. But this is just the start, because for digital, especially as you get closer to individuals and us as human beings, there are thresholds that we have to be very aware of. AI-based decision making is the next frontier for this sort of concern, and many industries, you know, notably everybody talks about autonomous driving and you know this scenario and that scenario, you know, et cetera, in the context of how will an autonomous car behave. That I think is a little far out, but AI ethics in very day-to-day things, if an AI process is AI-driven and it is doing decisions concerning human beings, then that AI has to be explainable, it has to be perhaps answerable in a court of law, and so on. So we are grappling with those questions today. You know, forget about autonomous cars, we're looking at those today. So I think it's a very deep and relevant question. We don't yet have all the answers. The guideline that I'm following in my mind is that if it doesn't sound right as a human being to human being transaction, then it's probably not right as a digital transaction.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So we've got a ton of questions coming in and not much time left. So we're gonna go to JF Barthelemy. He is with NASA Langley. So have you had to create new functions within TCS to enable digital transformation? And if yes, what are some of the key ones?
Great question. So I mentioned, let me take the questioner back to, I think, the second or the third question on how are we organized for digital? And I sort of simplified it by saying there's an internal side and an external side. That's our current status. But if I look back 4, 5, 6 years ago when we started the journey, we did not have those functions as advertised as they exist today. So the changes that we had to make, first of all, the role of the CIO or the function of the CIO had to be supplemented substantially with new interfaces coming in, new capabilities coming in to move from being a transactional, run the business kind of a mindset to a transformational, change the business kind of a mindset, right? So I mentioned the HR changes, the learning platform or the hiring platform and so on. They did not happen overnight. They were done over a period of time. Some of those teams came from my organization, the CTO organization, which is a research development and innovation organization. Others came from partners. Still others came from the business units, but that capability then channeled into the organization that we have. Our COO sponsorship of Machine First in 2017 and then Enterprise Agile in the last couple of years has also emerged in the last 4 years or so. To get the COO on board as the executive sponsor of those two key initiatives was a change because they did not have that level of executive support. They were being driven by the CTO organization, or they were being driven by the internal process organization. So those are the kind of changes that are on the internal side. On the external side, I mentioned that the president of Business and Technology Services, that organization is now 3 years old, did not exist before 2017. So that again is a consolidation. Now all the things digital that TCS does in the market as new product, new services, and new things that we put out in the in our business comes from this one organization. They have a portfolio now of about 15 or 20 digital service lines, which service then our businesses in different parts of the world, right? So that again is about a 2-3 year of our business. To close off, the only function that we have not had to change is perhaps mine. Right? So the CTO continues to be the go-to person for the research, development, innovation, new products, new services. The way I do it has changed, of course. Far more streamlined, far higher throughput, much bigger partner network, much deeper research in the labs and so on. But functionally, the CTO organization is still expected to be looking out 5-7 years. So I'm not, you know, exaggerating, but many of the things that we were researching in 2010, 11, 12, 13 are very mainstream now, right? So my challenge is to make sure that the stuff that we're researching now will be useful to the company in 2027, 28, 29, et cetera.
Oh, well, good luck with that. I'm sure that will be easily done. So I'm going to wrap us up now because we're almost at time, and I'm sure that you have a ton of stuff going on right now. So I want to thank everyone who joined us, and I want to thank you for your thoughtful questions. And I want to give a big thank you to you, Anand, for joining us. I know it's a difficult time to tear you away for an hour, but we really appreciate it. So I'd like to also, thank you. So, and I just want to remind all of you to join us on April 16th for our next interview, and that's going to be with the USG team. So again, stay safe, everyone, and keep your distance. And thank you, and good luck to all of you.
Thank you. Thank you, Lee. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Anand.